You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 29th of January. Looking at the trade landscape and a day to digest the Anthony Davis news. How does it impact the Utah Jazz? Plus, Quinn Snyder finds a new rotation, spurs the Jazz to greatness. And it's a Time Machine Tuesday. All those things coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz. Jazz NBA insider. Hope things are going very, very well for you today and that things are exciting. The NBA is blowing up, doing crazy stuff, and this is your site to get all the latest news. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, all of it breaking down for you on the program. We will dig into what I kind of told you already. Remind you, you can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, as well as, I believe, is it a Slow the Flow Day? What is it? What is our... It is a Slow the Flow Day. I love that. All right. By the way, you have to admit it. You got to admit it. You jump in the shower now. You start to, like, do the thing where you're, like, just kind of, like, chilling in the shower. It's comfortable. The kids aren't screaming. No one's around. It's awesome. And then all of a sudden, you're like, slow the flow. Yeah, I got to be good environment. No, I totally tell you. It's true. All right, let's get to the news. So yesterday the story broke right as we recorded Locked On Jazz that Anthony Davis was going to be traded or wants to be traded at some point. Locked On NBA did a bunch of stuff for you yesterday with Jake Madison, who is host of Locked On Pelicans, local experts, biggest story. So feel free to grab that. And then today, a really interesting one with Ben Golliver from the Washington Post. Now, let's get to what this all means. So the biggest kind of development yesterday is the role of the Celtics. The Celtics are the kind of wild card who have been obsessed with getting Anthony Davis but cannot get Anthony Davis until the offseason when they then re-sign Kyrie Irving. And at that point, Kyrie Irving is no longer a designated player and then they can go get a second designated player. So the questions are they willing to move Jason Tatum, their picks? And there's got to be some conversation that happens here between Danny Ainge and Memphis, which leads to just the weirdest environment around the Celtics now for the rest of the year. I cannot imagine that this is going to help the Celtics. These guys, if I'm Jason Tatum and I'm listening to all this, or I'm Jaylen Brown and I'm listening to all this, aren't I just suddenly becoming the single most selfish player on the planet? It's got to have a negative impact there. The other question on that is, so is the Lakers, and whether the Lakers can put a good enough package together between now and then. The Celtics are actually acting as great leverage for the Pelicans. So can the Lakers put together a package that's so good that it is superior to whatever the Celtics are going to offer? And the answer to that really depends on what you think of Lonzo Ball. And that's interesting because Lonzo Ball is a very polarizing figure where you either believe one or two things on Lonzo Ball. Advanced metrics guys generally believe he's all right. Other people don't. And so what is your decision? You know, what does Dell Demps and what do the New Orleans Pelicans think? You also better buy in totally on Brandon Ingram or other pieces, and I'm not sure I'm totally sold on Brandon Ingram either. I still throw out there this wild card that I just think is really interesting is if I'm Portland, no one else is talking about this, so I'm sure it's nuts, but if I'm Portland, I'm offering C.J. McCollum and Yusuf Nurkic for Anthony Davis, telling Anthony Davis, hey, we're going to run this out for the next 2 years with Dame, see if you like it here, see if this works for you, and that's their gamble. And if that gamble doesn't work, then they at least have a year with still left with Dame Lillard, I believe, under contract to try to figure that out. And I think Portland's suddenly a title contender, and actually the Pelicans with Drew Holiday, C.J. McCollum, Nikolai Mirotic, and Yusuf Nurkic maybe aren't terrible. What's wild about what's going on in the NBA right now is the two teams that are on the market going to trade players. Memphis is even in a tougher spot because Memphis, I think, really has to move Mike Conley before the deadline. And I would say that I think that they have to move Marcus Gasol before the deadline. I just don't know that they can. Marcus Gasol has a player option at the end of his contract, at the end of this year, where he can either pick up the option or not. And I think it has a chance to, it's kind of a chilling effect. If he picks it up, it just changes what your trade is so dramatically compared to if you don't pick it up. And so you don't know what you're really trading for with Marcus Gasol. You may want it, may not want it. It kind of depends on your point of view. But it still is just got a tremendous, there's just a huge difference depending what he does now. I guess you could try to get him to promise you what he's doing beforehand, and that's awfully hard to do. But if you can, then that changes a little bit. So the point here is you have two franchises that are on the verge of moving major pieces, neither of which I believe can afford to go to the bottom. New Orleans goes to the bottom, and I think they end up with the possibility of losing their franchise. Memphis goes to the bottom. I think they have the possibility of losing their franchise. Like, that's, and maybe their owners, you know, the Bensons, I think, are deeply rooted in New Orleans and care very dearly about having their franchise. We don't necessarily know about Robert Pera and what his ties are. He owns property in Seattle. He's from the Bay Area. He might not tie in. But it's wild that you have these two franchises, neither of which I think have the ability to go to the bottom and come back up. Neither of which have a great track record of decision-making with these major pieces in the trade deadline right now. It's a really fascinating circumstance. Now, how does the AD situation impact things? Okay, first is people are asking me about the Jazz. I can't envision, so the idea with the Jazz is that the Jazz would trade for AD to have him for a year and a half and have him walk in free agency. Okay, he's not staying. I'm not convinced, and that would be you're trading, because of that, you can't trade Donovan or Rudy. So we really, let's be honest, we can't put together a package. I've gotten the 500 emails, not five emails, not 500, five emails from people. It doesn't seem to be very likely or even realistic. But you can make the phone call. And so you want Derek Favors and Dante Exum and two or three first-round draft picks? Like, I guess. I'm not sure that moves the meter for New Orleans a great deal. Considering, I think L.A. can offer more. I think Portland's deal I've talked about is better. The Celtics will certainly offer more, so it's not a play. How does it impact the Jazz? Otherwise, I think the impact on the Jazz is the Jazz would probably have some interest in finding out what Mirotic's situation either is in free agency or by the trade deadline. And I think the Jazz would have some interest in Drew Holiday, whose comment yesterday is Anthony Davis is 90% of the reason I'm here. He's 27 years old. So what is New Orleans going to do? So New Orleans now knows they're trading Anthony Davis. New Orleans now needs to make the next decision. Are the pieces that we have on the roster going to be enough for us moving forward with whatever our roster is without Anthony Davis. So if we think we're getting Jason Tatum and something and Jaylen Brown and a pick and we're going to have Drew Holiday, well, then maybe we don't need Mir. Like, how do you think these things are going to work? Do you think you're getting Terry Rozier so you don't need Drew Holiday? Like, Drew Holiday's pretty damn good. You can just play him anywhere you want. But is there deals that can be made in other realms that they now can make deals now knowing what they're going to try to do in the offseason? That's what gets interesting from a New Orleans standpoint. I don't think that the Anthony Davis situation has a chilling effect on Mike Conley, Marc Gasol. The suitors for Mike Conley are Orlando, from everything everybody's reported. I don't know this inside, but just Orlando, if they're willing to trade Aaron Gordon. Dallas, if they believe they want to push all in now and think Conley's a good fit next to Luka Doncic and or Marc Gasol for DeAndre Jordan, if they think that that's a good fit for them, if they think that if Memphis likes Dennis Smith Jr. After that, there's a Wesley Matthews play there. After that, the pieces of the puzzle for Memphis and Mike Conley dry up really fast. I don't think Phoenix needs a point guard's in. If Orlando's not giving you Aaron Gordon, then you're onto a different deal with Orlando. If Dallas is not interested because they don't think it fits next to Luka Doncic, there aren't a great deal of other teams out there for Memphis to make that next deal. So I don't think that unless you believe that New Orleans was going to be one of those teams, I don't think this has a chilling effect on Mike Conley. Bucks aren't, unless the Bucks are going to go do a Bledsoe, but I don't think so. That doesn't feel right. Toronto, probably not. Indiana, not anymore. Now that Victor Oladipo's out, they've already lost one of their trade partners. Philadelphia, no. Boston, no. Brooklyn, I think there's a wild card there with Conley of whether they with all their injuries, but they have too many point guards already, so I don't know why they want another one. Miami's always a possibility with their bunch of average players that they have at high contracts. But again, that's a little, now we're into the second tier stuff. Detroit would give you Reggie Jackson for anything on the planet. So you just can kind of walk down this thing and Golden State, no. Denver, no. OKC, no. Portland, no. Houston, no. San Antonio, no. Unlikely, at least. Again, now the chilling effect comes the market dries up and maybe you're into something there. Clippers, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is their future. Lakers are tied into this. So it's interesting. I think that's where we sit. The Jazz have made a rotational change. Quinn Snyder has done something in the rotation that's a bit different. I dug into it a little bit yesterday. I'm going to dig into it a lot more next when we continue. Today's show is brought to you by my good friends at Murdoch Hyundai. If you are sub 30 listening to this show, I think you know the Hyundai brand. High value, ton of features, low cost, absolutely fabulous quality for your dollar. If you're plus 35, I think you're sounding like, Hyundai? Really? Maybe older. I'm 48. That was my reaction. By the way, just because my wife's 50 does not mean I am. Stop with that talk. So anyway, Hyundai, to me, I didn't know the brand. Now that I know the brand, I know all the things the youngsters know. Like, I'm hip to Hyundai. Oh, that should be their new slogan. Be hip to Hyundai. Be hip to Hyundai and get months like cookies. No, I don't know. All right. So anyway, 4646 South State Street. If you're in the market for a car, take a minute and look at Hyundai and see what they have to offer. I think you'll be stunningly impressed with what you can get for the dollar. Take a trip, go down, see Jason in the showroom, say hi to Blake. Jason helped us out. He was great. 4646 South State Street. You can also go to Linden. Blake's actually down there most of the time. You can go to Logan. See the Murdochs up there, and plus you're getting the Murdoch guarantee, the Murdoch family, all the aspects that make them such a terrific Utah family, 90-plus years. Stop by Hyundai Assurance, 100,000-mile warranty as well, America's best. It's all at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. So Quinn Snyder doesn't entirely agree with what I'm about to tell you, so this would be if I was not as well connected to Quinn and did do coaches shows with him every night, I would totally push this. So let me say there's probably some outside factors that he won't share with me that took place here that created this, but it's at least worthwhile and interesting. And there's a website called PBP Stats, which kind of led me into some of this, so I would like to give them the credit that they deserve. You can use using some visualization on one of their sites of how the Jazz used their starters and who was on the floor with who. You can see that starting around December 2nd, or December 12th, the home game against Miami after losing to both San Antonio and Oklahoma City, that the Jazz made either some rotational changes they are on the verge of, or they made some rotational changes. Or Kyle Korver at this point has now been with the team for six games, and Quinn figures out what he wants to do with him. Final note, Donovan was having the hamstring problems, sat out the end of the Minnesota game on October 31st, sat out the end of the November 23rd game, sat out the Sacramento and Indiana game, was now back healthy and able to play a little bit more freely. Couple all of those things together, and now I am going to make the next step that there was this big, huge conscious effort and this big meeting, and they changed the rotation, and that's probably not true. But here's what did happen. Since December 12th, the Jazz are 16-7 with an efficiency differential of 8.3, and they are the number third best differential in the NBA. And their defensive efficiency is sub-100. The starters in that time period have been good. Rudy, Donovan, Faves, and whomever else, those have been kind of the three stalwarts there. There have been some chain and Joe Ingles. Are plus 12. They play 10 minutes together, the least amount of minutes of any group of starters in the NBA. Okay? The game's moved away from playing two bigs. Quinn gets kind of a grouping of them together. They set the tone. They play some great defense. The defense has been amazing at 91.7. May not be realistic to keep it that low, but it's been great. So that's 10 of your 48 minutes. For another 20 minutes of the night, what the Jazz are doing right now is playing Rudy and Donovan together without Favors. And the Jazz are plus 17 in that time period. Plus 17. 111 offense, 94 defense. That comes out to plus 17. So you have 10 minutes of the starters, 20 minutes of Rudy and Donovan playing with a spread floor where the Jazz are dominant. And then here's the interesting one. And Korver plays around in various groups here. 10 minutes of Favors and Ingles with no Rudy and no Donovan. And that's the key maybe to this whole thing. Is that since December 12th, the Jazz have found a way in the minute, if you're going to play Rudy and Donovan paired together for 30 minutes, they have found the way to get through. Now you got to get through 18 minutes. They have found the answer for 10 of those. They have not found the answer for 18 of those, if I'm totally honest about it. But when you have your two best players off the floor, if you're not getting waxed, that's awesome. And so in that time frame, the Jazz are plus 6. And Favors and Ingles have this great pick and roll combination, which they work. The other 8 minutes of the night are a little bit of a zoo right now. But that is not a crazy thing at all, because that's kind of what happens. And you play your best players together, you dominate, and you try to link the other minutes. And right now, when we play about three of those minutes with Donovan and no Rudy, and we're not good, and then we play about four of those minutes or three of those minutes with Rudy and no Donovan, and we're not good, and then we link a minute of like, oh, dear God, hold on for dear life. But it's pretty interesting. Actually, updating you, because I just ran the numbers, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell off the floor, Joe Ingles, Derek Favors on, are now a plus 8.8. Defensive rating is a 94.4 with Gobert off the floor. That's huge. Those 10 minutes of Ingles and Favors together is just fabulous. It's a great little discovery find work by Quinn that gets you through that portion of the game. When they have all of them on the floor, they're actually, it's interesting that when Gobert, Mitchell, Favors, and Ingles are all on the floor together, they're plus 6.4 since December 12th. So it's really cool. And then they got to link the other minutes. But part of the thing that happened here, Donovan got healthy. Korver arrived. Korver's a large part of that, by the way. I mean, let's not, that group right there, that when in those 10 minutes a night, when, or maybe it's, you know, it's about 9 or 10 minutes a night, when those guys are out there, Kyle Korver's on the floor for 7 of them. Jay Crowder's on the floor for 7 of them. It's a very spread floor. So Favors is playing the 5. These guys are rolling to the basket. Korver and those guys are getting open, and it's pretty darn good. It's a wide-open spread floor for those 10 minutes and the 20 minutes for 30 of our minutes, and then we kind of sneak in. Really, for 38 minutes a night, we're now playing spread out. And that makes a huge difference. And the addition of Kyle Korver by Dennis Lindsay was masterful. Korver, in the 6 minutes a night Korver plays with that group, Korver's shooting 56% and 52% from 3. Crowder's not shooting well. And he's just not shooting well from 2. He's shooting well from 3, 36%. Ingles is interestingly the one struggling in this lineup because he's playing with the ball in his hands. He's not getting catch and shoot. He's been replaced by Korver and those guys. Dante was a part of that lineup for a while. He's not anymore. Favors is shooting very well in that circumstance. Rubio plays a little bit in that lineup to try to get Joe going. But it's been impressive, both offensively and defensively, what that group has done. And that's the key, this rotation change. So watch it. Against Portland coming up, watch those. There's kind of 4-5 groupings here. Starters, Rudy and Donovan on their own. My dad's going in for surgery today for a ruptured bicep tendon. Just texted me, broke my train of thought. The third group is now Favors Ingles. The fourth group is when Donovan or Rudy's on the floor by themselves and it doesn't work very well. And then the last group is just the hold on for dear life for like a minute every night. It's pretty interesting. The idea of coupling Donovan and Rudy together for 30 minutes a night, to me, is the most interesting aspect about this. Slow the flow, everybody. Time Machine Tuesday, by the way, coming up in just a second. Slow the flow. Seriously. I got it. Like, water conservation seems weird right now, but it's really important. We live in a desert. This is me going off copy. Slow the Flow writes really fun, creative copy about the various things. I'm going off copy here and just kind of just saying to you, like, seriousness here for a second. So we live in a desert. Our population, we're the number 2 population growth city in America. We are using our resources at a alarmingly high rate, and we need to be conscious of it. Like, it's really not complicated. So here's what you can do. Install a low-flow toilet. You save 0.3 gallons per flush, which doesn't sound like a lot, but flushes add up. You can take a shower instead of a tub. So that's the first one. You'll go from using like 20, if you take a 5-minute shower, you use about 25 gallons of water. In a tub, you use 70. So that's nice. Big change. And then if you take your 5-minute shower down to 3, you go from 25 gallons to 12, right? So, I mean, it's just simple. Really easy, simple, conscious effort on all of our parts to take care of our state. It's great. Now, Slow the Flow does all this creative stuff about their writing about WER and your water efficiency rating. I'm just appealing to you as a human right now who respects our state. Go to slowtheflow.org. Slow the Flow. Save H2O. Save Utah. Be good to this great, unbelievable, amazing place we live. Time for Time Machine Tuesday. Let me go into my hat, pick out a year, and see what I get. 11th year of the Jazz franchise. The 1988-89 season. This is the year the Jazz won 50 for the first time ever. This is the year in which the Jazz change coaches. Jerry Sloan takes over in year number one. So let's go find out. And we lose to the Warriors, and George Karl gets swept in the first round of the playoffs. Let's go find out what we got. Last night, we beat the Knicks 127-104 in a blowout win. At home, we were up by 7 at the end of one. We were down 1 at the half. We outscored the Knicks 68-44 in the second half. Fast-paced game. So let's look and see. The Knicks started Mark Jackson, Johnny Newman, Trent Tucker, Charles Oakley, and Patrick Ewing, with Rod Strickland coming off the bench. Kenny Skywalker also. The Jazz started John Stockton, who had 10 points, 18 assists, 4 rebounds, and 4 steals. Your 2-guard was Daryl Griffith, 19 points and 2 assists. Your 3 was Mark Ivoroni, who now would be like a center. Karl Malone dropped 41 on the Knickerbockers, 17 of 18 from the free throw line. I wonder if that was Malone's, like, that has to be an early 40 in his career. 9 points, 2 assists, 2 steals. Mailman destroys Charles Oakley. Thurl Bailey came off the bench for 23 that night. 7 rebounds, 2 assists. Game took place in front of 12,444. Ken Maurer was the official. He's still calling games today. Paul Milicek and Bennett Salvatore were the officials. Do you think that was You think that was Mail's first 40? What year was that? What did we just say? 88, 89. I think he's his fourth year by then. So that's the 88, 89 season. He's got to have dropped 40 before then. But let's check. In 85, 86, Mail's rookie year, he does not drop 30. In 86, 87, he does not drop 40. He drops 30 10 times. So we're 1 year away. Let's see what happens. 87, 88. Mail dropped 43 times. First time Mailman ever dropped 40 was he dropped 41 on February 4th of 1988 against Portland. He had 41 and 19 with 7 assists. Then he dropped 41 25 days later against Sacramento. He had 41, 15, and 3. And then he dropped 40 again at the end against Seattle to end the year. On the 22nd of April, he dropped 41. In the 88-89 season, he dropped 45 times. So this is now becoming a regular occurrence. First time was on November 19th. He dropped 42 against Phoenix. December 17th, he dropped 44 against Philadelphia. They lost. January 14th, he dropped 41 and 13 against the Warriors. They got blown out by 26. 14 days later, he drops 40 against the Knicks in the game we're talking about. Pretty good games. The mailman delivering. That is your Time Machine Tuesday. We'll see what happens in the trade world. Exciting times. Tomorrow makes 1 or 2 weeks away from it all taking place. Or excuse me, 2 days, 1 week. It's a week from Thursday is the trade deadline. It is going to heat up. It is Locked On Jazz. Go check out Locked On NBA. Tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. Have a great night.